A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 298. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about The Last Dragon Slayer. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So this was a Sky TV film from Christmas of 2016. It's about 135 minutes with a mixture of sort of old English charm and sword and sorcery type things with magic, but also modern technology, and of course dragons. And all of this puts a teenage heroine in the protagonist slot as well.
Yes, there's a hero quest in The Last Dragon Slayer. Will she become the title character?
Absolutely, of course.
So we hinted at some of the plot developments in our last episode. Let's get into it in a bit more detail. As we say, we've got Jennifer Strange, this plucky teenage hero, learning about her destiny, that her name is in fact on the sword, which is supposed to be used to kill the last dragon. And of course, she will eventually have to come face to face with the terrifying creature itself, although it is, as we've said, charmingly voiced by Richard E. Grant. And we didn't really mention it last time, Brian. Obviously, we've got CGI dragon. It's a very colourful dragon compared to the sort of more darker dragons that we're perhaps familiar with in Game of Thrones. But it's pretty well done as CGI. It's a bright, colourful, slightly friendlier looking dragon, but it's, you know, it's still a very daunting prospect for Jennifer Strange to meet, even if it is voiced by Richard E. Grant.
Yes, it's a very colourful show as well, so having a colourful dragon does sort of make sense. It works.
But meanwhile, of course, Jennifer Strange is supposed to be running the magical agency while the great Zambini is missing. She's finding it all a bit much. She's got quite a lot on her plate in this show, so I suppose it's a relief when her fellow orphan Gordon turns up to take over all the paperwork for her, something that he seems to delight in. He's very fascinated by accounts and paperwork. So that leaves Jennifer to sort of find out more about her quest. And, you know, these two slightly bumbling magicians, Lady Morgan and Mr. Mubin, to get on with some of the magical tasks required of the agency, with, as we said last time, a considerable variation in the success rate.
Yes, and Gordon seems to be the perfect mix of accountant and lawyer to turn up for them at just the right time.
Yes, he does. He steps into a difficult situation for them and sorts it out in a few moments.
But he is also fixing some of their financial issues and working things out for Jennifer as the Last Dragon Slayer, using merchandising opportunities with this grocery store, supermarket type store, Stuffco. And the president of Stuffco becomes a part of it as well, and she's someone who we may not want to trust.
Yes, the fabulous Anna Chancellor as the Stuffco president. You probably remember her as Duckface from the Four Weddings and a Funeral film, but she's fantastic in this as a sort of power-suited chief executive who wants all the merchandising opportunities and wants to promote her brand and use all sorts of television advertising and so on to do so.
And Jennifer is doing this even though she doesn't want to do this merchandising, but the money is needed, and she has to deal with the public and all of these things with the fact that she doesn't want to wield a sword and she doesn't want to kill anything.
Yes, the major dilemma for the last dragon slayer that who doesn't want to kill a dragon. So we hinted last time at this strange mixture of magic and technology and perhaps the old and the new that is features in the sort of strange world of the last dragon slayer. I noticed, you know, that I see this thing sometimes in Hollywood productions, although this is a British production for Sky TV, where they had this sort of quaint picture book approach to certain aspects of British countryside and life. The sort of things that we see in the magical world parts of the Harry Potter films, but also, you know, I've noticed it in non-supernatural films like the live-action 101 Dalmatians. And of course, more recently, we've seen, you know, a very cute and charming form of London in the Paddington movies, which are, you know, delightful things in their own right. But it's a strange sort of Hollywood version of England. And there's also some sort of anachronistic features that you noticed in Hereford here, Brian.
Yes, there's a lot of anachronistic stuff. We have an orphanage at the beginning, which is very much a Victorian, or maybe stereotypically Victorian, idea of an orphanage. And we have horse-drawn carriages and things that are very much have a Victorian look to them. And then we have these sort of more medieval looking things with the armor and swords and sort of sword and sorcery kinds of things. And then we have our modern things with neon lights and exercise bikes and, you know, electrical wiring and sort of modern shopping malls and grocery stores and the like.
Yeah, it's very weird. I mean, you know, we've got castles with kings in them, but it was also lit by neon lights. In fact, there's quite a lot of bright neon in The Last Dragon Slayer. The dragon's colourful, but as you say, Brian, the show itself is extremely colourful with this sort of charming look at well, Jasper Ford and his sort of clash of, or his, you know, mixture of ideas that he puts into the books and that have turned up in the show.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of the sort of things that go back to these sort of sword and sorcery kinds of things do have quite a bit of anachronism in them, but this really embraced it, which I think is quite fun.
Yes, it did. And I mean, it is a slight diversion, but I did notice, again, this sort of stylized, nostalgic version of the UK that film and television often goes for in these sort of programs. And I looked across the pond, I wondered whether, you know, it happened in American and North American TV. And then it occurred to me that there is, I suppose, depictions of small town America in places like Stars Hollow in The Gilmore Girls, and of course the charming and quaint Cabot Cove in Murder, She Wrote, which of course is charming and quaint until we think about the 600 plus murders that happened there. But, you know, apart from that, I suppose that's the nearest equivalent in North America, that small town American depiction.
Yeah, Smallville would be another example of the American one.
Oh, that's a good call. Yes, that one is a good one. Yeah. Again, very charming, apart from all the strange things that have been happening since meteorites fell.
Indeed. But back in The Last Dragon Slayer, we have this sort of British charm and these anachronistic elements and this plucky teenage lead with the, you know, very colorful dragon and the like. So it's this very vibrant kind of show for a Sky Christmas event.
Absolutely. I mean, and when the production team picked up Jasper Ford's novel and brought it to Sky TV, they must have thought, yes, that's a perfect Christmas offering for family viewing. You know, a colourful dragon, a plucky hero who's on a quest, and these quaint and weird mixture of old and new England. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can see them just thinking, oh yes, this fits right in somewhere between Harry Potter and Game of Thrones.
Did they get the kind of viewing numbers they were looking for?
Well, that's the bit I haven't been able to find out, unfortunately. I don't know. I don't remember a lot of fuss about it. You see, I don't have Sky myself, so I didn't see this at the time. But it would be very interesting to know whether it was a big success for them and whether it's been repeated.
Interesting. Something to think about there.
Yeah, perhaps I need to look into this a bit more or have one of our listeners fill in with whether or not this was the big success that Sky TV were banking on for that Christmas.
So we should get into some of our own thoughts and feelings more than we already have. Eamon, what did you like about The Last Dragon Slayer?
Well, I have to say, it looks fantastic. You know, I'm slightly critical of this sort of quaint depiction of England on television and film. But, it, you know, the quaintness of Hereford, the colourful castles, the neon, the costumes, you know, the whole thing about the production just looks fantastic. And even, you know, we have to say the CGI dragon, it's perhaps not quite up to Game of Thrones standards, but it's still pretty good. And it's colourful, it's slightly scary for its sort of younger audience, but at the same time it's got a charming voice. So I think the look and the sound and the design of this program, absolutely fantastic. I couldn't really fault it at all in terms of what they did with it, Brian.
I would agree with all of that. I think it does look very good. I really like the world building in this and the ideas that built this fantasy world. I think the anachronism in it is wonderful. They really went for this idea of having a little bit of everything and made it work reasonably well. So we have, you know, the neon lights and television broadcasts and, you know, merchandising, sponsorship stuff and the big shopping malls and everything. And at the same time, we have sort of, you know, sword and sorcery things with dragons and medieval looking armor and that sort of thing. And slipped into the middle these sort of Victorian elements. I think all of that worked well and was really quite clever and added a lot to this.
Yes, and I think, you know, to go back to the original books, although I haven't read them, but I think this is a Jasper Ford thing that he likes to sort of collide various bits and pieces of, you know, literary history and so on together. And I think, you know, it is a sort of charming mixture and this clash of the old and new. And it allows them to do sort of, as you say, Victorian orphanage, weird exercise bikes that raise the sort of drawbridge at a castle, the neon lights, Matt Berry's having great fun playing the king in his robes, who's looking for business opportunities. It's all very interesting stuff. And I suppose it brings me on to ask you about the performances within the show, because we've got a very impressive cast list here, Brian.
I thought the performances were pretty good. The young lead in the show, you know, that's always a tough one. And I thought she was pretty good. I thought she was okay. Some of the older characters, like Zambini and the other magicians he worked with, I thought those were very good. They were really quite fun. The second orphan, Gordon, was very good. So all in all, I would say we have a pretty good cast of characters here. I like the performances.
Yeah, I did as well. I mean, I thought they were all charming. You know, as you say, Andrew Buchan, Pauline Collins and Ricky Tomlinson as the Zambini magical agency, they're great. Richard E. Grant is suitably sort of, you know, menacing as the charming voice of the dragon. And I, you know, I did like Elise Chapel as Jennifer Strange. I thought she did a great job against some very sort of senior acting talent.
She was good, yeah.
And then presumably she's also having to do that, you know, acting against the tennis ball on a stick when she's dealing with the dragon, which is always, I should imagine, challenging for any actor.
Yes, the interactions with the dragon or conversations with the dragon were very well done. I thought that, you know, they had to, you know, carry quite a bit in this show. And I thought they were very well done. That really worked well.
And then we've got, you know, shall I say, some of the sort of the villains of the piece, you know, the king, Matt Berry, Anna Chancellor doing great stuff, Adil Akhtar, you know, as the sort of almost child catcher role at the start. You know, great stuff. There's some terrific performances in this program.
Yeah, there really are.
So were there any downsides of The Last Dragon Slayer that you found, Brian?
There weren't a lot. In general, I really like this production. I would have to say that it is not a sort of big substantive show. It's a little bit of a slightly disposable show, that it's a fun watch, but it's never going to be a great favorite for me. But generally, I would have to say I quite liked it.
Okay. I mean, I thought there was quite a bit of business to get through in the middle third of the film. You know, we get that introduction at the start to Orphan, Jennifer Strange and the great Zambini, and that's all charming and wonderful. You get the ending when she has to, you know, take up the sword and journey into the Dragonlands. Is she going to do something that she really doesn't want to do? In the middle, there's a bit of business to get through. You know, there's the stuff about Stufco. There's Prince Griflon, you know, the teenage heartthrob. So I found myself getting a little bit lost with the plot in the middle of it. But that was only a minor, I suppose, distraction. You know, the hero quest continues. She takes up the sword and has to make her decision. Okay. Is it, you know, it's all in all, it's an interesting package from Sky TV. And as I say, one that must have seemed like just the perfect thing for Christmas showing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's time to get to our recommendations here. Eamon, would you like to start on this one?
Well, Brian, it's a tricky one for me because all the elements are there that should work perfectly. It's got everything. It's got, you know, a plucky hero. It's got a great production. It looks great. It sounds great. The acting's great. And yet I've watched it twice for this, you know, for our recording. And each time it just sort of slipped past me, you know, possibly because I was feeling in a sort of post-Christmas lunch haze, even though I wasn't. And it didn't really wow me like I was hoping it would do. And perhaps like Sky TV were hoping it would do. We'll see whether or not they decide to do the sequels. I guess, you know, 18 months on and there's no news about that. So for me, I'd say if you've got a young family who are looking for the next thing after Harry Potter and you haven't shown them The Last Dragon Slayer, I would absolutely say $4.99 is worth spending and showing them that because they'll have great fun with it. But for, you know, like a solo watcher like myself, I'm not sure is the answer, Brian. What about yourself?
Well, I think I enjoyed it more than that. I thought this was really quite fun. So I'm going to recommend this. It's a fun little watch. I don't think I would put it onto, you know, a watch every year list or anything like that. It won't be one of my great favorites, but it really is quite fun and a good, solid little show. So, yeah, I would recommend this.
Okay, and as ever, if you watched The Last Dragon Slayer on Christmas Day 2016, particularly if you sat down with your family and watched it, please come by the Facebook group and tell us what you thought at the time.
Absolutely. So, in summary, The Last Dragon Slayer introduced us to young orphan Jennifer Strange, who is brought into this agency of magicians who are doing small magical jobs in this world that is this strange blend of modern high technology things and sword and sorcery and medieval magical type things with some Victorian aspects thrown in as well. And magic, it seems, is dying, as are the dragons who are separated off in these dragon lands. And we are coming to the point where the last dragon slayer will go through to slay the last of the dragons. And that is Jennifer Strange. And this will move towards an interesting conclusion that involves all of these elements.
A dragon-tastic summary there, Brian.
Thank you.
And come back next time and join us when we're staying in the lands of fantasy and fable for a milestone, really. It's the magnificent Jim Henson's The Storyteller from 1987. Really loads to talk about when we come back next time on that one, Brian.
Yes, and that's really going into folktale territory, which will be fun to do for sure. Until then, you can find all of our past episodes at BritishInvaders.com, fantasy, science fiction, and more. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our group there. And please join in on the discussions there.
Or if you feel like casting a spell of your own, you can find your way to VogNetwork.com, which is the Voice of Geeks internet radio channel. Lots of geek-related shows, and British Invaders, proud member there. We broadcast on Mondays and Tuesdays. Drop by and join in the fun there as well.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, Eamon in England saying, don't forget to shop at StuffCo.